Hi, my name is Shada Al-Mutawa. Thank you so much for having me here with you today. I have a terrible cold, so it feels like there's a cloud instead of my brain, but I hope I'll make a little bit of sense. I started out by sharing some very painful, angry, hurt poems, and I wanted to do that just to help you come to the place where I am at the moment. The political situation in the U.S. has been extremely difficult for Muslims in the last more than a year, really. It's been a long time. And so these poems, which are hurt, betrayed, angry, pained, sad, are poems that actually give me hope, because they're poems that show me that we can talk about our feelings and we can express them, and we can do it in poetic ways that might bring us together and help us heal. But that's the starting place, and that's not the place where I want us to end today. My talk is actually about a very different mood and a very different atmosphere. It's about the laughter and the love and the playfulness and the stuff that you do when you're not thinking about politics at all. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about popular culture in the Muslim world, but the title should really be more like popular culture in the Arab world and a few Muslim countries, because the Muslim world is huge and there is so much diversity within it, and I don't know all of the diversity there is, so I'll just tell you a little bit of what I have experienced and seen. So I'd like to start by going back to the year 1923 in the Syrian city of Damascus. A poet was born in that year. His name was Nizar Qabbani, and he wrote about love. His poems were turned into songs, which were sung all over the Arab world. They were sung by Abdul Halim Hafez, who is an Egyptian singer and actor who stole the hearts of many, many women all over the Arab world. Every time he appears on the TV screen, women melt everywhere. And his songs were also sung by Fairuz, who is still singing today. And I think of her as the voice of the Arabs. It's the most beautiful voice that you hear all the time, wherever you go, in the car, when you're in restaurants and shops and stores, just walking down the street. But the poems of Nizar Qabbani, that poet who was born in Damascus, that city over there, in 1923, were sung by many, many others, and they're still being sung today. And what is most interesting about his poems is that not only are they all love poems, but they're also very erotic poems. And people just didn't care about all the language about breasts and other body parts. They just embraced them, and they sang them everywhere. Why did that become such a big thing? Why did Nizar Qabbani's poetry become so popular? Well, for one thing, he turned the language of Arabic poetry into the language of the Arabs today. So instead of going with the traditional clunky style of the Arabs who were writing 1,000 years ago, he decided, I'm going to write the way we speak now. And so he modernized Arabic poetry, and he's talking about love and about women and about sex, and he's doing it in a way that's accessible to many, many people all over the Arab world. Poetry itself is the art form of the Arabs. It's the form of art that Arabs have been carrying with them all over the Arab world since more than 1,400 years ago. Before Abdul Halim Hafez and Fairuz were singing the love poems of Nizar Qabbani, there has been poetry that's coming from the Arab world, from Mecca and other regions, from Yemen, about love as well. And to celebrate it, Arabs show up on competitions on TV, like Arab Idol and The Millionaire, and they get some of their ideas about these poetry events from Western shows like American Idol and things like that. But more than 1400 years ago, there used to be an annual poetry competition that took place in Mecca. And Mecca at that time, before Muhammad's birth, was the place where polytheists used to come and talk and perform, recite poetry. Thank you. And in that competition, somebody would emerge every year who would recite the poem that would end up, legend has it, embroidered in gold thread on fabric that would be draped over the Kaaba. So the tradition of writing poetry, reciting poetry, and sharing it in public and competing to win the title of best poet has been around for more than 1400 years. And love as the topic of poetry has always been one of the most popular topics to write poetry about. So now, what about the rest of the Muslim world? Where does that fit in? So there are 1.6 billion Muslims in the world today, and 1.8 million in the United States. So that's about less than 2% of the US population. Only 20% of Muslims live in the Middle East. And the countries with the largest Muslim populations in the world are mostly not Arab countries. So Indonesia, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Nigeria, the top five, the countries with the biggest Muslim populations, are not Arab. Egypt, Algeria, and Morocco are considered Arab countries. And what that means is that these are countries where the majority of the people speak Arabic. And I come from the United Arab Emirates, which is an Arabic-speaking country, so my culture and my upbringing comes from that region. And my studies have focused on Iraq. So again, my work has focused on that. So there's a lot going on in these countries that I haven't studied and that I'm not familiar with. But I hope that you will explore these other cultures in other venues. So you'll see from this map, this is the United Arab Emirates where I come from. Mecca is here and Damascus is up there. So what's going on in this part, basically, the Arab world, where I come from? First of all, we have Umm Kulthum. Umm Kulthum is basically the lady. And she's not only the lady, but she's the diva of the Middle East. She, like Fairuz, has been the face and the voice of love and poetry and singing for many, many years, from the 30s and the 40s till today. She and Fairuz are basically what you would hear if you're just entering a store or a restaurant. Her voice, her songs are hours long, and people would huddle together by the radios and just sit there for the entire time, listening to 5 or 6 hours of her singing. Really a captivating music about love. But that those voices from the 30s, from the 40s, and the 50s are not, of course, the only voices that are singing about love. So from the Arabian Peninsula today, we have people who are bringing the Gulf flavor of music into the scene. So we have somebody like Rashid al-Majid. And then back to Egypt, we have people like Haifa Wahbi, who is something like the Britney Spears of the Arab world. And we have this band from Kuwait, Firqat Miami, who plays some of the songs that are most popular in weddings that people just really love to dance to. And from Algeria, we have Saad Messi. So I'd love to play some clips from those if we have time. I don't know if we will, but these names are big names. These are names that people, know, that people always hear about. The tabloids will talk about what these guys are doing, or who's writing about them, or who's painting them, or things like that. Now, something else that you would see very frequently if you come from the Arab world, if you turn on the TV, let's say on a Friday, you are probably going to see a Bollywood movie. And those are coming from India. And there are lots and lots of Bollywood movies that are either dubbed or translated into Arabic. And again, most of the time, they're about love. This particular film, Jodha Akbar, is actually a historical fiction that is loosely based on reality. And it's about the love between a Muslim sultan and his Hindu wife. And one of the biggest themes in this film is that the wife refused to convert to Islam. So her condition for the marriage was that she does not convert. And so that is honored throughout their lifetime. And it's supposed to give a message of hope for the people in India, who are living amongst each other with these different religions that sometimes end up being the cause for some violence and sometimes end up coexisting just fine. So if you are a Bollywood fan, then Shah Rukh Khan is one of the big names. He is an Indian actor. He is Muslim, and he is the heartthrob if you are a young girl in the UAE today. Katrina Kaif is one of the Bollywood actresses who is also very popular in the Arab world. Her Indian films are translated and dubbed as soon as they come out, and she is part Indian, part British. Her father was Muslim, her mother was not, so she's an interesting figure for people who try to figure her out, and her life seems really interesting. So, besides Bollywood usually on Friday, but on the evenings, weekday evenings, if you would go to some typical UAE house or some house in Kuwait, you'll probably see the grandmother and her daughter and her granddaughters huddled around the TV watching this Turkish soap opera, Magnificent Century. Magnificent Century is about, it's a Turkish soap opera, and it's about the Sultan and his harem. And so the Sultan at that time had many slaves, and these slaves had very important positions in the court, and they were responsible for all kinds of intrigue within the court. So I think there are 7 seasons of this and over 180 episodes in each season, and people really loved to watch religiously. Every time I call my mother, she's watching Magnificent Century. Okay, so now if you are too busy to watch Magnificent Century because you're hanging out with your friends and going out to check out the newest restaurant in town, you are probably looking at Instagram photos. And Instagram has become a huge thing in the Arab world these days, with people like Asya from Kuwait and Mithail Al-Ali really creating these businesses out of their Instagram personalities. So all of these businesses will invite them to come eat at their restaurant or wear their clothes, and they would just wear them and show their photos, and they have millions and millions of followers, people who are watching every day, who know what they're wearing, where they're going. Everything they're doing makes money. And there are many, many, many of these. One of the interesting things that came out of this kind of Instagram activity is new fashion. New fashion for the veil, new fashion for the abaya, which is this big, silky robe that you wear. So in the past, in my grandmother's generation, when they wore the abaya in the Arabian Peninsula, it was all black, and there was no design, just a big piece of fabric that was black. And the new generation in the UAE has been experimenting with different colors and different styles and making it fashionable so that your high heels can show. And it's taken off. Women are creating these entire fashion businesses with Instagram and selling millions and millions of dollars worth of clothes based on the photos they're uploading. Not all of it has been profitable, but maybe more fun. We have the Lebanese Kardashians. These are the Abdelaziz sisters. Again, millions of followers on Instagram. If you like the Kardashians, this is another family you would probably find entertaining. So what are the Arabs creating in terms of film? The biggest film industry in the Arab world is the Egyptian film industry, and they have been making films since the 20s, the 30s, with, you know, black and white movies and all the typical romantic comedies. But Lebanon is now becoming a big place as well. So Hanna Nawain, which is portrayed here, is about a Lebanese village that is half Christian and half Muslim. And the members of the community are really affected by what's going on in the world outside of their community. The men want to take up arms and start fighting each other because of everything that's happening. The women are trying to find a way to reconcile them. And so they come up with all kinds of crazy ideas to create peace, and in the end it seems they've succeeded. Saudi Arabia is another place where we have film coming out, even though it's not, I think there aren't even movie theaters there, but they have a lot of television channels and a lot of actors and people in the entertainment industry. Wajda is an interesting film that came out recently. It's about a young Saudi girl whose dream is to own a bike and to ride a bike. It's really sweet, really fun. It talks about her struggle as a young girl who wants to raise money to buy the bike, and in the background, her mother's marriage and her relationship with her father. In Canada, we have an interesting TV show called Little Mosque on the Prairie. I hear it's very popular. I haven't watched it yet, but it's supposed to be really sweet and fun. Now, these soap operas, again, like with everything else that we've talked about, are often just lighthearted and fun, or they're making money, they're creating fashion, they're setting the trends. In the UAE, the soap operas have been used as a way to remind people of their traditions, which are slowly dissipating and disappearing because of all the trendy new stuff that's coming from all over. This, what you see here, is a traditional mask that women used to wear three generations ago. So my great-grandmother used to wear it. And it's this piece of cloth that's kind of golden and really terrifying for children. But because young people these days are less exposed to these traditional things and don't really have a lot of interaction with the older members of society, this TV show was created. And it's about four grandmothers who are very sassy and very cool and really fun. And this became a huge sensation, not only in the United Arab Emirates, but in the Arabian Peninsula at large. So lots of stuffed ladies and dolls and stickers and things like that. And for the younger people, again, we have the superheroes, the Muslim superheroes, the 99 made by Khalid Matawa, who is not related to me, Dust, Burka Avenger, Ms. Marvel, and Qahira, among others. There are a lot more and more comics with superheroes in them these days. And finally, we go back to literature and the books and the words. So if you're looking for something fun and lighthearted to read about Saudi life, if you're a young woman, The Girls of Riyadh has become a huge sensation recently. But if you're more into the older generation and the more beautiful poetic prose, you could look at Najib Mahfouz. Ahdaf Aswaif is another novelist who is very well respected in the Muslim world. Ahlam Mustaghami is not. She is more of an erotica writer, banned in some countries, welcomed in others, but always, you know, making headlines in the Arab world. The bamboo stalk has been a recent sensation as well. It has been turned into a TV show. And if you're less inclined towards the frivolous and more towards the stories of conversion and religion and religious life, you might be interested in Muhammad Asad's The Road to Mecca, which is about his conversion to Islam. He was Austrian and Jewish. And then finally, there's Persepolis, which is by an Iranian who writes about her life in Iran and after immigrating to Paris. So we go back to Nizar Qabbani and his poetry. Here, what you have on the screen is the book cover, and the title of the book is Ashhadu anna la imra'ata illa anti. I testify that there is no woman except you. So what does that mean, and what does that have to do with religion? Well, if you're a Muslim, the most important thing for you to do is to testify that there is no God but God. So you can see immediately, just from looking at the cover of a book and the title of the book, that religious language and religious feeling is in everything. It's everywhere, even with the most secular and the most, let's say, irreverent of poets. So the language of religion doesn't always appear in the expected ways or the most common ways. It appears everywhere, in daily life, in the love stories, in the songs, and in the laughter. Thank you.